Hello and welcome to Climate Emergency Manchester. I'm joined by Lauren and Chloe and we're at my place in Northern Moor, M23. We've got paper chains up, third year now, and a table full of treats and hot drinks as we do our best to warm up, holding MCC's feet to the fire on a climate emergency. We know you're busy. You've not managed to get out of the consumption-driven frenzy that is Christmas, and you've no time to listen to podcasts on Scrutiny Week and local politics. So, we'll keep it short. We have three reports from the Environment and Climate Change Scrutiny Committee that met last week, each as a bite-sized segment. Local area energy plans, electric vehicle charging, and single-use plastics. Let's dive in. Local area energy plan. Who wants to introduce?
I can have a go. So the Local Area Energy Plan, or LAEP, as they started calling it. Yeah, it wasn't an acronym that tripped off the tongue. But the LAEP, this was a slightly unusual item in that it was a piece of work that had been really done at a greater Manchester level. But was coming to the Manchester City Council Scrutiny Committee. And the best way to define it is sort of a blueprint for what the different energy options might be in a region or area. The interesting thing about it is it thinks or takes the view that every place is different and has different needs and therefore maybe a different energy future is right for that place. And I've personally found some of the most interesting things in the report, those that drill down into particular areas, sometimes quite small areas about what might suit them. So it was a really interesting piece of work. The discussion of it fell a bit flat, but it might be nice to think how it could come back at another point, not least because this is something where there has been quite a bit of consultation, and it is something where if you talk about it with people in the community, they quite often have some good ideas. Yet somehow hearing it presented as this sort of high level bureaucratic item did fall a bit flat.
I think, as quite often happens, the people discussing it in the room aren't really that clued up on the subject. I mean, nor am I. But it's not my job to be, I guess. and so I don't know whether maybe they were kind of faced with this report and just a bit like, well, I don't really understand this and therefore didn't really know what questions to ask. I mean, there were some interesting questions, but I think, like you said, it did just fall a bit flat. And also, what was their role? Why was this report being presented to them? They're not really signing it off in any way. It's just sort of for their information.
Yeah, it was exactly that. It felt like an FYI from Greater Manchester Combined Authority to MCC. And there was important stuff in there. And we should probably get into it in terms of describe local area energy plan doesn't necessarily tell you what we're talking about. So we're essentially looking at how our homes and our buildings are heated, electric transport and infrastructure around that, and energy generation in a local area. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, they're the three main areas. And for each of those, it tried to draw up what are kind of long-term things you could add, and then what are some first-step priority areas, and including this great phrase that was new to me anyway, no regret options. I love the idea of no regret options. I think next time I go into the bar, I'll be like, I'd like a no regret drink, please.
It's a very corporate lingo, that no regret and low regret.
Okay.
So it's basically the no regrets is the this is a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. We should do it.
The current technology that we know is going to work and will bring us to our carbon emissions targets.
Mm. So they talk about no and low regret in the form of insulation. We should insulate people's houses because they do give some interesting alternative scenarios in the report. And so one hinges very much on the technology that we've been talking about a lot on this podcast, air source heat pumps, that sort of thing, solar power. The other one, more what the UK government has been pushing for since Boris Johnson was around, Remember that? Mm-hmm. Which was the form of hydrogen and the different forms of hydrogen you can have, whether they come from a renewable or non-renewable source. And the whole document seemed to be hinged around, there's this national project, the HyNet project, yeah, which is about delivering low carbon hydrogen at scale. And I've heard hydrogen being used as a panacea for transport, how we're going to power our cars, how we're going to heat our homes, how we're going to heat really big warehouses. I don't know if it's been talked about in terms of aviation as well. There's a lot of things that use hydrogen, apparently.
And this simple switch to hydrogen will mean that nobody has to change their behaviour in any way. We can just continue living the way that we do, but with hydrogen instead.
Perhaps with adapted boilers. So I can see why it's tempting. You're not having to change all the infrastructure of how we heat our homes. It's the same pipes. It's also the same vested interests,
exactly, yeah,
in terms of the energy companies.
So, but if we can make this simple switch to hydrogen, will that mean that government will take its foot off the gas in terms of retrofitting homes?
Nice
and
pun.
People won't... Oh, I didn't even realise. And people's energy bills won't necessarily be lowered either.
They won't be... It doesn't make homes more energy efficient.
No.
So if the price of hydrogen goes up, it would be more expensive.
And gas is a finite resource now, and if the price of it is high now, why would it decrease?
Yeah.
It's a really good question.
So it's business as usual, but just with a different gas.
I think the fact that in the Northwest it's Cadent, but it's a lot of the work that has been promoting this was originally scoped out by those companies.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so a lot of vested interests have pushed for this. That's why, shocker, Boris Johnson's government went for it and built it into a national strategy, heavily reliant on the idea of carbon capture. If you're using a fossil fuel to create hydrogen, you're talking about carbon capture at scale, which I don't think has been fully proven. So a lot of... heavy lifting there by the vested interests. But the report sort of uses that as that's one alternative. But there's questions around, will this HyNet project, the national project, deliver low carbon hydrogen in time for Manchester City Council or Greater Manchester Combined Authority to meet their 2038 deadlines? If not, then we need to go down the other path, which is heat pumps. Mm-hmm. And potentially solar panels,
which
and
we know
heat networks
already work.
Yeah. Interesting thing I picked out from the report was if this low or no regret stuff about insulating people's houses, there's actually more of it that would need to be done if we go down the hydrogen route, because it won't be delivered until later. So we'll need to reduce emissions quicker through insulating in the short term.
Right.
Which I thought was quite interesting.
Mm.
But would it happen that way?
It hasn't so far.
That's a chain of events that's about bringing down emissions, mm-hmm. whereas the chain of events might actually be to do with what funding is on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And this is partly written as a kind of funding document, they explain, so that when there is a call, they are not just opening up Microsoft Word for the first time and dashing out, we would like money for. They go to this and they take the idea from it, or a longer version probably that is not available to us. Okay, maybe that's a good idea. We've spoken before about funding for all kinds of measures to do with the climate emergency, that rather than just complain about national government, start having ideas of yourself. So I do like that idea of thinking what you could have. But that implies that you might just take any idea, whichever order it comes up for, whenever the first opportunity goes. Okay, we're going to do this one, rather than they have to be in a certain order.
Mm. A couple of things that I noticed from the report was around the emissions that they're considering as part of the modelling that they're doing. And there's a very technical modelling system that they're using to develop these different scenarios. In scope was domestic, industrial, commercial consumption of electricity, gas and other fuels, home charging of personal electric cars, and process emissions from large industrial installations. Out of scope was agriculture, usage of liquid fuels for transportation, electricity for use, and electricity use for vehicles other than personal cars. So what I'd like to understand there is, where do car clubs fall into that? So if it's not a personal car on a home household driveway, is it included or excluded? Because otherwise I fear it might be straight away discounting one of the more radical ideas that they could take, which is needed for when we looked a few months ago at the radical carbon budget changes. They're going to need those sorts of things. Are they being discounted by this strategy?
Car club is an interesting example, because it may be that it's mainly used for personal journeys, but it might get classed as commercial because it's linked to the car club.
Yeah. And that could be the thing that really reduced numbers of cars on the road. We'll come on to that probably in the next segment. Another paragraph, they talked about EV infrastructure. Again, we'll talk about that in the next segment. But it talked about projected uptake increasing from fewer than 2,000 EVs today to over 140,000 by 2038. Driving a demand for EV chargers, around 72,000 domestic chargers would be installed. That is their scenario, at a cost of £40 million. Along with multiple public charging stations or hubs. And then in their summary, they talk about how low carbon hydrogen is what we've talked about. Any delay to the high net may mean it arrives too late to keep within the carbon budget. The similarities across scenarios point to low regret opportunities in each area of Manchester and identify potential priority areas for using hydrogen.
At what point do we make this decision then? At what point do we say, oh, actually, hydrogen's going to be too late?
Fairly soon, I think they're going to have to. So I think they're talking about potentially making it available to buildings in the region by 2030. Should HyNet be delivered on time, then it could have a significant role in decarbonising Manchester, but any delay would mean we need to go another way. So we're at 2022 now. Over the next few years, we should be building up the heat pump and retrofit.
Yeah, I'd just be cracking on, lads. Like, what time have we got to lose?
Like, when was the last time that, like, a major national project from, like, Queen Elizabeth Line to, like, Wembley Stadium to, like,
HS2.
Even the only one that was almost on time was perhaps, that I can remember, was, like, the Millennium Dome, because it had, like, such a clear, like, if it's not open for the Millennium. Even then, I don't think it was fully open.
It was
open.
A big tent. It definitely wasn't on budget.
No, but it's more likely to be delayed, isn't it?
Yes. And even then, the assumption, as we talked about, the insulation would need to be happening now, even if the hydrogen was going to happen. So why would you not just do the heat pump?
This has some things in common, I think, with the Manchester Climate Change Agency framework, where it lists all these options and pathways, but who's saying it has to be this one? And it has to be now, and this is when we pull the plug on this one.
That's not up to the council, right? The Climate Change Agency is just sort of there to say, here's what's happening and here are your options.
Yeah, but in that case, it's not clear who's saying that in the council. And in this one, who are the people who are going to say, now we need to hit this one on the head because it's too late? They're not identical, but they're both like nice detailed documents that throw up all these great options.
And again, they're putting them in front of people who aren't specialists in that subject. So how can they make a decision?
No.
So no one's making any decisions. I mean, nothing's happening. So
we talked a little bit about how dry the councillor section of the meeting was. Let's get into some of the councillor feedback. So Councillor Nunney talked about how domestic appliances can't run on 100% hydrogen, so it would need to be mixed with, methane. And the officer said he was absolutely correct, but this is really something for Cadent, the regional gas operator, to do this across this mix across the network. So it's not one for MCC, happily.
I think that suggestion just doesn't work very well in the context of a scrutiny committee meeting where it's like, what about this? And they're like, oh, yes. A bit like your car club question. It'd almost be better to kind of have it in a different format where you threw a load of different scenarios that didn't seem to be taken and get more people and like stress test it and like, well, have you thought of this? Rather than just throwing out other suggestions. It was a good point. It just fell a little bit on deaf ears. It was like, oh, yeah. Probably does make a difference.
The next one was Councillor Lyons, talked about changing the internal heating systems and residential historic apartment blocks. Those heritage buildings make replacing windows very difficult and asked, how can we help those residents take action without harming historical nature of buildings? And the answer he got?
Didn't really.
Too difficult.
One. Yeah.
That one's too difficult.
My notes, and I pretty much am writing minutes of what things are saying, and all I've got is, matter of cost, brackets, no answer to this question.
And the chair later came in on this point because she said that she lived in a ward with a lot of pre-1914 buildings, and were these people just being hung out to dry?
They were also just too expensive to retrofit, and so they aren't included in the plan, and are we just leaving these people to freeze, I guess?
Or pay huge amounts.
Yeah.
Councillor Wright asked about a circumstance particular to her area in Hume, where there's land which was originally owned by the council but has been taken up by a managing agent, and owner-occupiers can't even do things like solar panels on their own roof. Mm. And is there anything that the council can do to help them? And the response was just so vacuous. Officer said, happy to look into it, but council is quite limited in the scenario. Lots of stuff about leadership again in this segment. Said, civic leadership, give good advice. Private landlords are the hardest group to engage on climate action as they don't reap the benefit. It was just no actual answers. It was just not our remit, basically.
And it's just, you know, a consequence of a just completely fucked housing market where housing just exists to make people money rather than a place that people need to live. So why would a private landlord invest all of this money in retrofitting their properties when they're not going to benefit from it directly?
And that comes up in the next segment again. Landlords, that would be what they call demand-led. If they're not demanding it, it won't happen.
The other reason they didn't really, they just, the damp squib, Councillor Wright's question, it was a good question, was nobody picked up then on the points in the report about energy generation. That's what she was asking about. And in the report, it says that actually like those hyper-local like energy generation have diminishing returns in terms of carbon reduction benefits. But they're actually also a way that people can get quite excited and interested in that, like neighbourhood energy generation projects. It's a way that people understand in schools when they've done sort of energy generation projects, they don't make a big difference, but they're actually a good way that you can start to kind of track and engage. And this was kind of dismissed as a, oh, well, it's just a problem over there. But actually, there's more that you could do around local energy generation to kind of bring people together and get them talking about how things what sources of energy they are.
The best source of challenge I saw was probably from, yes, Councillor Wright, but the chair, Mandy Chilton Godwin, did talk about how, yeah, she was pleased to hear of a new team that was going to be coming in to work on this area. But the key point about this was, if someone's boiler broke down tomorrow, they have to buy a boiler that won't be fit for purpose in 6 to 8 years, or an air source heat pump that, without a significant retrofit, could be very expensive to operate. Mm-hmm. And she wanted reassurance to know how this will be driven forwards through the city to benefit residents and carbon budgets. And that, I thought, was possibly the first bit of real challenge I've seen recently. And the response, again, was just finance, we're trying, innovative bids and budgets. And basically, it sounds like they are waiting for a more amenable government to turn the taps on and start putting some serious money behind this. And I can understand that.
It doesn't help that case study of person, my boiler's just gone, I want to do the right thing, but what should I do?
It me.
It's you, that is you.
So my boiler's knackered. which has moved into a new house, and it is a Victorian terrace. It's very poorly insulated. And what do I do in this situation? I don't want to spend $2,000 on a new gas boiler when 5 years down the line, I might have some money to retrofit. I mean, I doubt it. But, you know, there might be some kind of government grant available at that point. Who knows? And I'll have wasted all of this money.
And then on that idea of who's going to pay for it, the officer also talked about very heavily promoting the Your Home Better scheme, which is a GMCA, mm-hmm. Combined Authority scheme, for those who are willing to pay and able to pay. And I would love to find, because I'm going through this at the moment, and I am having to find a significant wedge of money, and I can't say that I am willing or able to pay.
It's going
to
be such a tiny number of people yeah. who are going to do that. I mean, you've got to pay £450 just to get the advice anyway.
Mm. And then the budget that I got quoted was £35,000. Okay. Mandy Shilton Godwin, the chair, asked for an update on this in the new municipal year.
Yeah. When the team has been assembled.
Avengers.
And assembled. They're all on it, working. They've made a decision.
Small plea that it just comes back in a different way, apart from this, like, top-down report. I don't know if you get... Can we have some people who are doing these various like scenarios, like trying to get their boiler, just mix it up with some different voices. Even that would be a bit more lively. I don't know what the update will be in a few months' time. They need to find another format for this item, which is really important, but just... Okay. Maybe it's because everybody was off sick, apparently, but I don't think it's that. I think it needs to be presented in a slightly different way next time.
That's it for Bite Size episode 10.1. Be sure to let us know what you thought in the Q&A in the podcast description if you're listening on Spotify. Or you can email us on podcast@climateemergencymanchester.net because we really want to know what you think, especially whether these shorter segments are working for you.